The headlines this hour. Iran condemns the recent Saudi-led deadly airstrikes on a prison in Yemen, warning that the attack may achieving a just peace in the country more difficult. Calls growing in Afghanistan for justice to be served in the case of a U.S. drone strike that wiped out an entire family in Kabul. And the U.S. says the first shipment of its military aid for Ukraine has arrived in Kiev, as tensions keep escalating between the West and Russia over Ukraine. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is Muse. Thanks for joining us. The spokesman for the Yemeni army is warning foreign companies operating in the United Arab Emirates to leave the country amid an escalation of airstrikes. Yahya Sari says that the UAE is no longer safe, and investing there is highly risky for foreign firms. He says that the UAE will remain unsafe as long as it continues to attack Yemen as part of a Saudi-led military coalition. The warning comes on the heels of a major drone strike by Yemeni forces deep inside the UAE last week. The retaliatory raid targeted three fuel tankers in Abu Dhabi, killing at least three people. Following the operation, the Saudi-led coalition launched hundreds of airstrikes on Yemen, hitting mainly civilian targets. Meanwhile, Yemen's health minister says the death toll from the Saudi-led coalition's latest airstrike on the country has risen to at least 82. According to the minister, another 266 people have been injured in the Saudi strikes, with many of them being in critical condition. Saudi warplanes bombed a prison in the northern city of Sada in the early hours of Friday, killing dozens of people. At least three children also died in a separate air raid on telecommunications facilities in the western city of Hodeida. The attack led to a nationwide internet blackout. Saudi Arabia and its allies launched a devastating war in Yemen in March 2015, killing hundreds of thousands. Meanwhile, condemnations are pouring in over the Saudi-led coalition's deadly airstrikes on Yemen, with the UN chief describing them as unacceptable.
Now, any bombardment that targets civilians or that is not careful enough to protect civilians is, of course, also unacceptable.
Guterres has called for a prompt, effective, and transparent investigation into the airstrikes, which left dozens dead. The Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman also slammed the assault. Said Khatibzadeh says such deadly attacks, coupled with the inaction of the international community and uncontrolled arms sales to Saudi Arabia and its allies, have complicated peace efforts in Yemen. The former leader of the UK Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, has also censored the attacks, calling for an end to arms sales to Saudi Arabia. He believes they make London complicit in the Saudi crimes. Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has also condemned the raids as terrifying. It says that the attacks are aimed at covering up the Saudi failure on the battlefield. And in Iraq, resistance groups have denounced the air raids as a massacre of Yemeni civilians. No punishment yet for U.S. military personnel behind a deadly drone strike in Afghanistan just days before the withdrawal from that country in August of last year. Now many Afghans, including the victims' relatives, want the Kabul strike to be regarded as a war crime. The U.S. drone strike left 10 Afghan civilians, including 7 children, dead. The U.S. military initially defended the attack, claiming that the target was Daesh terrorists. But the Pentagon ultimately called it a tragic mistake following the release of the airstrikes video by the Central Command. Until now, no one has been held accountable for the carnage. Afghans say that the U.S. military had acknowledged their strikes as mistakes in the past, but the perpetrators were never brought to justice. Tens of thousands of civilians were killed by U.S. forces during their two-decade of presence in Afghanistan. We reached out to former Australian Army legal officer David McBride for his take on the U.S. deadly strike. He believes the attack was illegal and amounted to a war crime.
The fact that the U.S. military originally said the target was a legitimate target makes it clear that they hit the target that they wanted to hit, and the fact that their target they wanted to hit was 10 children means that there are big questions to be answered. The only way they could have got out of it by a mistake was if the weapon had misfired and it hit the wrong building. But the fact that they hit the target they were aiming for and still killed children, I would say it's pretty much a war crime, and the Afghans should be outraged that there isn't even a trial. There has to be a question that the Americans are covering up their crimes, and when they say there was no misconduct, they're not saying that in good faith. They're saying the lives of Afghans don't really matter, and we are not going to punish our people even if they do the wrong thing. I suspect that they needed to, for political reasons and the embarrassment the withdrawal had caused for the American administration, meant that the leadership of the American military were desperate to kill somebody and to make it look like they were fighting terrorists, and they got found out. I don't think that there was any real... there can't be, under the rules of engagement, that could not have been a legal strike. That they routinely do the wrong thing. He went as far as saying 90%, I think, of the people that were killed were either the wrong target or deliberately targeted civilians. Even if it's 40% or 30%, that means the leadership are reckless to the lives of the people in the Middle East. And if you're doing that, you're creating terrorists. You're not killing terrorists. In these cases, most of the time, they just do not have any kind of intelligence, and the people are targeted by what's called signature strikes, where the man might be wearing a traditional Afghan or Middle Eastern-style dress, perhaps carrying a weapon, perhaps carrying something that looks like a weapon, and they'll be killed on that ground alone, and they're in a particular territory. Now, that's illegal. That's a war crime. It's not illegal to have weapons in those countries. Doesn't make you a terrorist. And the idea that the Americans think they can kill them. The Americans have become a law unto themselves, and it's because there is no accountability.
The eighth round of talks between Iran and the P4+1 group is ongoing in the Austrian capital, Vienna. We are now joined by our correspondent for an update on the intensive talks. Homolesky, what do you have for us?
We had news that there's been a meeting between the head of Iran's delegation, Mr. Ali Bagheri Kani, and the EU coordinator, Enrique Mora, followed by a meeting again with the presence of Mr. Mora and representatives of the three European signatories of the JCPOA, namely Britain, France, and Germany. We had a senior EU official, an unnamed official, telling Western media yesterday that it would be, quote, very, very, very tragic, in the words of that source, and an incredible mistake if we couldn't get to a good deal because of the issue of timing. A lot of emphasis, especially coming from the EU and the US, when it comes to the urgency of the talks and the fact that they say they want the talks to conclude within weeks because of the advances of the Iranian program, and that if this doesn't happen, then there will be a tragedy in the offing. But Mr. Ulyanov, the Russian ambassador to these talks, in response to a tweet quoting this source, said that timing is also very important for Russia as well, but it should not define the outcome of these negotiations. In his words, it shouldn't be seen as a major defining factor in these talks. If there is an intention by the participants to make this happen, if we would paraphrase this, then it should happen. It shouldn't be stopped because of the issue of timing. What we're hearing now also is that one of the major obstacles in the way of this conclusion is the demand from the Iranians for legal guarantees from the American sides, meaning that they want to have objective reassurances or assurances that the U.S. will not withdraw from the JCPOA again or implement or violate the deal by imposing additional sanctions. Now, there have been questions as to how such a guarantee could be given. Is it possible to put a legal clause in an agreement that is a political agreement and not a treaty? Is it possible for the Americans to even give such a guarantee? How can they give the assurance that would be acceptable? We're hearing that there are ideas and proposals on the table on this and other issues, including, for instance, the verification of sanctions, etc. And we are hearing that a lot of these offers and proposals or initiatives are coming from the Iranian side as well, with the intention of making progress in the talks. But as the Iranian foreign minister, Mr. Khatibzadeh, said in Tehran, the Iranian side believes that if the Americans make the political decisions that need to be made when it comes, to sanctions removal and the verified and effective sanctions removal, then things can move ahead quite quickly and at a good pace. And also quickly, I'd add here, we also had a source close to the Iranian team today, again rejecting some reports when it comes to an interim agreement and saying that an interim deal has never been on the Iranian delegation's agenda, because the only deal Iran would accept is a reliable and durable agreement.
Thank you for that, Homolesky. We appreciate it. Homolesky, our correspondent from Vienna. Iran, Russia, and China have held joint military drills in the Indian Ocean, the third such exercise in the past several years. This year's drills are called the 2022 Marine Security Belt. They showcase the trio's growing ties and signal their capabilities to establish security in the region. The drills took place at a time of the West's heightened tensions with Russia and China, sending a signal to the U.S. that these countries are not alone and are more united than ever.
Iran, Russia, and China began joint military drills in the north of the Indian Ocean on Friday. Dubbed the 2022 Marine Security Belt, the exercises are the third to have been carried out between the three countries. The drills cover 17,000 square kilometers of ocean. Vessels and equipment from both Iran's army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps were on maneuvers. A variety of tactical exercises, such as rescuing burning vessels, releasing hijacked vessels, shooting at specific targets, shooting at air targets at night, and other tactical and operational exercises were carried out during the drills. Strengthening the security of the international maritime trade, combating piracy and maritime terrorism, exchanging intelligence in the field of maritime rescue missions, and exchanging operational and technical experience were among the objectives of the 2022 Marine Security Belt exercise.
I believe that the message is mostly to the people and to the nation, like the United States or other allies, that they want to have, they want to carry on some kind of activities in these areas. And if you ask me if this one is something where it will create a kind of joint action between Iran, Russia, and China, I would say yes. In this area, I don't think that they will tolerate in the future any kind of activities that we can define as terrorist or attack or pirates or these kind of things.
Iran says its presence in the international coalitions manifests the improvement of the Islamic Republic's standing in the world. An Iranian spokesman for the joint drills says Tehran attaches great importance to the establishment of security at regional and international levels.
The United States unilaterally withdrew from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action in May 2018. It reimposed sanctions on Iran in an attempt to isolate the country. But almost 4 years after Washington kicked off its so-called maximum pressure campaign against Tehran, results are far from what the U.S. had expected. Iran has been boosting ties with its neighbors and its allies, practically rendering all the pressure from the West ineffective.
The trilateral exercises come as Iran is taking steps to balance its foreign policy. While talks on the revival of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, and the removal of U.S. sanctions against Iran are underway in the Austrian capital, Vienna, Tehran is expanding its ties with its two key allies, Russia and China. Earlier this month, Iran and China began the implementation of much-anticipated Sino-Iranian pact, known as the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership, a 25-year cooperation agreement that's aimed at strengthening the two countries' economic and political ties. Also last week, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, said Tehran and Moscow are set to begin working on drawing up a similar roadmap that will shape their cooperation for the next two decades. The statement came as Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi was on a two-day trip to Russia. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization's unanimous decision last September to approve Iran's membership to the bloc after almost 15 years was yet another development signaling the future of Iran's economic and political ties with the East.
I think that, you know, the strategy of the geopolitics of the United States is in this area, and I will say basically in Eurasia, is in the way that they don't want the formation of a strong Eurasian continent. So, you know, they're fighting basically against China and very strong against Russia, and they have first the sanction with Iran, and they put a lot of pressure to Iran. So it's normal that these three countries, they will join together from a different point of view.
What this all shows is that Iran's seeking a more balanced foreign policy, and that Tehran isn't staking its future entirely on the fate of the 2015 deal anymore. While making efforts to salvage the deal, it's considering other options to ensure its economic goals are met.
Washington boosting military ties with Kiev as tensions with Moscow drag on. The first batch of the U.S. military aid arrives in Ukraine. The U.S. Embassy in Kiev says the shipment includes nearly 200,000 pounds of lethal aid, including ammunition. It is part of a $200 million package that the U.S. approved in December. This is what Washington and Moscow agreed on Friday to keep working to ease tensions over Ukraine. Kiev and its Western allies accused Moscow of preparing to attack Ukraine. The Kremlin denies the allegations. Germany says it will send a field hospital to Ukraine, but has rejected Kiev's calls for weapons delivery. Berlin is under pressure from the U.S. and other Western allies to stop the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which will carry Russian gas to Germany and the rest of Europe. This amid a spike in energy prices in Europe due to a gas supply crunch. And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, as it was not a signatory to the deal. The article you're about to hear has been written by Julia M.K., a Beirut-based analyst, writer, and political commentator. The article has been taken from the website of Press TV, and it's titled, Iran Won Fair and Square. A few weeks ago, Benjamin Netanyahu, former Israeli Prime Minister, brazenly said that Tel Aviv didn't have to abide by the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, as it was not a signatory to the deal. Since 2015, Israel has taken full advantage of its leverage over the United States, the European Union, and the IAEA in attempting to sabotage Iran's nuclear energy program. Yet all attempts have failed miserably, from assassinating four Iranian scientists between 2010 and 2012, and key Iranian figures such as General Qasem Soleimani or scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh attempting to launch Stuxnet cyber attacks on critical infrastructure, all measures have backfired onto the Zionist entity, bringing about even worse repercussions for the European Union and for the United States. By America's own admission, there has been no evidence of Iran's non-compliance throughout, particularly at the time of the illegal US withdrawal from the agreement. There wasn't any doubt that Iran has played by the rules throughout the entirety of the diplomatic process. The European Union and the United States expressed disappointment not because of any lack of cooperation from Iran, despite being demonized for abiding by the terms of the US's own deal, but rather the futility of bringing Iran into a renegotiated deal. Iran's chief negotiator, Ali Barghari Khani, made it clear on 11th of December that nothing less than the JCPOA in its complete form will be agreed upon. Iran has presented two draft documents based on a policy of guarantee and verification, a reasonable demand following the Biden administration's attempts to renegotiate following illegal 2018 sanctions placed by the Trump administration that ripped apart the deal in the first place. Yet the United States could not return with one counter-proposal or bring its own draft to the negotiating table, leaving its claims on Iran's level of compliance baseless. Rather, it is continuing to be steward of a coerced intimidation and threat approach. Israel's inability to cope with the futility of its loss flew Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz and Israeli President Isaac Herzog to Washington on 5th of December to push an ultimatum on Biden by December 9th. Attack Iran through cyber attacks or even a military strike on its regional allies or with more sanctions. Benny Gantz boasted to the Americans that he had ordered an attack on Iran, a move even the United States knows to be futile. A military attack would result in not only a legitimate retaliation from the Iranians and all regional resistance forces, which would easily defeat the Israeli regime, but also allow Iran to do so without losing its entitlements from the nuclear deal. Iran has the right to retaliate for the illegal murder of Fakhrizadeh and the 3rd of January 2020 assassination of top general Qasem Soleimani, an act which only resulted in heavy losses for the United States, the losses which it took to its bases in Iraq, completely sabotaging the reoccupation campaign undertaken post-2013 following the 2011 US withdrawal. Cyber attacks on Iran's centrifuges only gave Tehran the chance to replace those that needed updating anyway, as well as strengthening their security. Though the Zionist entity, working through the IAEA, the European Union, and the United States, has not been held accountable for its actions diplomatically, it and its allies have suffered a bigger loss with each successive plot. The endless scheming has failed to position both Israel and its allies as being the best or at least better planners. As of late, it's questionable how unbreakable the bond really is between the United States and the Israeli regime, following the latest fallout from the nuclear deal. Yes, the United States House Committee passed the Stop Iran Drones Act on 12th of December, comically adding more sanctions during rounds of a negotiating process which is meant to remove illegal sanctions in the first place. The Israelis also attempted to resort again to contacting European and American intelligence to push the claim that Iran was enriching uranium at weapons-grade degree of purity. In an unusual move, the US declined Israeli requests for tanker aircraft as the Zionist regime pushed to fast-track an attack on Iran. In a Friday, 10th of December interview, Donald Trump angrily said that if it weren't for his compliance in withdrawing from the JCPOA in 2018, Israel would have been destroyed by now. The latest domestic dispute in the House of Empire didn't occur primarily over Netanyahu's eager congratulations of Biden in a partisan sense, as various media sources have emphasized, but rather another indication of the increasing contradictions and mistrust between the allies, whose reputed inseparability is increasingly marred by losing their political grip and grounding domestically and on the world stage. Reports in Zionist regime media, too, have revealed anxieties of its ability to effectively control Washington amid brewing distrust. The United States has more to gain from a fair deal than no deal at all, and Tel Aviv fears that Washington would resort to opening communication lines with Iran without the Zionist regime's knowledge, with a precedent in history. Yet, not a likely outcome because of the deep entrenchment of Zionist lobbyists in Washington politics. Meanwhile, Iran, the honest party under a deal that was designed to stack all the odds against it, has emerged the victor in the Battle of Vienna talks' latest round, and ultimately the overall winner of the war. Iran is in a position and certainly has the right to make more solid demands in light of its opponent's shady ground. Any false claims that talks have been stalled are weak attempts to obscure that. In reality, more diplomatic progress and political clarity has been attained in the last two rounds of talks at Vienna than in the previous 6 years of the nuclear deals process. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, wasn't a fair fight, but Iran clearly beat the United States at its own game.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at the justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen, or at least the justice from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen, the commander of the faithful, Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi as-salam. When it comes to justice, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi himself takes over the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam and the same plans that the Prophet has established when it comes to human rights and justice. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam, in his mission to establish peace and justice for all, he blew a voice in the ears of Abu Sufyan, the locks of Abu Lahab, Ummu Jamil, Hind, the liver eater, and the Quraysh tradesmen, on account of which the foundation of their plans were demolished. Their structure was broken and the roofs came down on the ground. However, this very voice was a good tiding and a message of happiness for the Muslims and the helpless people. He said to Abu Talib, when they came and they made the Prophet an offer to lay down Islam and do what they wanted to do, he said to his uncle, if they place the sun on my right and the moon on my left, so that I abandon inviting people to Islam, meaning establishing justice on earth, I shall not do so until Allah the Almighty makes this religion victorious, or I should lay down my life for it. So the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, he says that the system of justice, the system that he's bringing forward to guarantee the safety and happiness and prosperity of people, is more important than his own life, a mission that he will not give up. So when Quraysh came to him and they said to him, look, if you want wealth, we'll make you the most wealthiest amongst us. If you want position, we'll make you the leader of Quraysh. And if you seek kingdom and kingship, we will make you the king. In which he replied, a reply that echoes through history. He said to them, my objective in inviting people to Islam is not to acquire wealth or position, nor am I desirous of becoming your king. I extend this invitation because God, Allah Almighty, has sent me to you in the capacity of a prophet, and he has revealed the book to me. He has ordered me to warn you of his torture and give you glad tidings of paradise. I have conveyed God's message to you. If you accept it, you will be prosperous in this world as well as in the hereafter. And if you reject it, I shall remain patient until Allah gives his judgment about you and myself. And clearly the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi has indicated to them that their safety, their prosperity, their happiness, the happiness of mankind lies in him delivering this message and in them accepting it. They accept it, they get paradise. They reject it and they get hell. Let us take a short break, then we continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Now, before the break, we mentioned the stand of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi when it comes to establishing justice and the system of Islam. What did the commander of the faithful Amir al-Mu'mineen do? What was his attitude towards the sons and the son of Abu Sufyan and Hind, the liver eater, and towards the traders who bought and sold position and offices, and towards the soldiers who blindly sacrificed their lives for the benefits of others, and towards those who had sold their religion and beliefs and at the hands of falsehood. Imam Ali alayhi salam, he himself, it blew a voice in their ears, which demolished the foundations of their design and their plans, and made their structure and roofs collapse on their heads. And his voice became the good news of happiness and a message of comfort for the righteous and the pious people and the poor. He said, "Your powerful are weak in my sight, and your weak are powerful in my sight. So long as the stars revolve around the sky, I shall not give a judgment opposed to justice. By God, I shall do justice so far as the oppressors and the oppressed persons are concerned. I shall put a kevisor on the nose of the oppressor and pull him towards the truth, even if they may dislike it most. I swear by God that I admit the truth before any evidence is given against me. I do not care whether I myself am walking towards death or death is coming towards me." Now, this is a very similar statement to that which the Prophet made, that my life is not valuable if I do not establish justice. I don't care whether you are powerful, I don't care whether you are kings or rulers. I shall establish justice, even if it means my demise and in this action. One day a person came to Amir al-Mu'minin and he said to him, we are respectable members of the community. And he said to them, an object person is respectable in my eyes until I recover his right, and the respectable person is weak in my eye until I recover the right of the weak from him. Now clearly to Amir al-Mu'minin, he does not differentiate between people. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from. If you have oppressed someone, he will take the right from you and he will give it back to those who are oppressed. Now this is just as beautiful as justice could get. That's just as righteous as justice could get. And no one has applied this kind of justice except for Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. Inshallah, in next episodes, we will examine how Amir al-Mu'minin put those words into action when it came to him dealing with the people of his time and practicing the notion of justice. Obviously, we can tell that it wasn't easy for him, but that did not deter him from his mission and his objective, and he remained steadfast in the face of calamities and troubles and tribulations, and he succeeded. And we today, we live by the voice that he made, the call to justice. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. 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 Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has once again reaffirmed that Tehran has no intention of wasting time or derailing the sanctions removal talks in the Austrian capital Vienna. We have prepared for you an article written by Faiz Akbarshahi, an international relations expert. The piece is titled "Iran's Logic and Broken U.S. Master Key in Vienna Talks." Only over 130 days were enough for the United States to realize that Iran is serious in the Vienna negotiations and wants to remove nuclear and sanction disputes with the West. On 29th of July 2021, a week before the administration of President Said Ebrahim Raisi took office in Tehran, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the negotiating process cannot go on indefinitely. On 30th of November 2021, after the conclusion of the first round of talks, he stated, "We still believe diplomacy is the best path forward for putting the nuclear program back in the box it had been under the 2015 nuclear agreement, officially known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. On January 10th, Mohammad Marandi, an advisor to the Iranian negotiating team in Vienna, said the Western side is seeking to prolong the negotiations. Over the course of 131 days, only two rounds of negotiations took place. But the remarks by Antony Blinken and Mohammad Marandi show that there are events underway in Vienna which are not covered by the media. American political history shows that Democrats have a thirst for keeping busy. In their view, there is no master key, and each case and subject had its own requirements. Republicans, on the other hand, do not like the fuzzy logic system and look at things in terms of ones and zeros. Remember comments by former US President George W. Bush, who called the world either with us or against us, and Donald Trump, who has always embodied good and evil in diplomatic equations. However, in the face of Iran, U.S. President Joe Biden does not want negotiations only to resolve nuclear and sanction disputes with Iran. He is trying to seize the opportunity provided by the talks to get concessions from China and Russia. But now, Joe Biden's master key is broken, and he has no alternative plans other than doubling sanctions. On the other hand, the European trio is dragging its feet, wasting time and avoiding commitments to the JCPOA while attempting to redraw the equations in such a way that, first of all, the US interests are not harmed by the multilateral nuclear accord. As Iranian scholar Abu Muhammad Asghar Khani has said, the Republicans were seeking to swiftly contain Iran and withdrew from the JCPOA so that the Europeans could keep the Islamic Republic within the JCPOA prison. In this regard, the U.S. appreciation for the measures taken by the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, and the European trio concerning Iran's nuclear case is meaningful. The Europeans are also trying to advance the negotiations mechanism in such a way as to get concessions from both China and Russia. The rifts between Germany, Britain and France on the one side and the European Union on the other side shows that the European Troika views negotiations with Iran even as a profit-making platform that makes the post-Brexit system meaningful. The differences between the narratives of Enrique Mora and Josep Borrell, who represent the European Union's strategy, and those of the three European countries the European Troika envoys proves this proposition. On this basis, it can be expected that the expressed differences will emerge if Iran continues to adhere to its position, especially with respect to the verification of sanctions removal and guarantees that the U.S. would not abandon the agreement once again. The politicization of the IAEA's work, the emphasis on the nuclear breakout, the negotiations with the Zionist regime in the middle of the Vienna talks, and of course the discussions with South Korea and Saudi Arabia, all demonstrate that the opposite side has not benefited from driving a wedge between Iran, China and Russia. Blaming Tehran, imposing a deadline and even prolonging the negotiation process. It thus wants to face Iran with more diverse incentives and threats so that the country feels it needs a minimum deal, something that was previously called a temporary agreement. Rendering the aforesaid techniques ineffective stems from an innovative Iranian approach in the last two rounds of negotiations. Firstly, Iran tried to advance the nuclear issue technically and properly recognize the demands of the other side through the smart separation of the overt and covert layers of the negotiations. Secondly, Iran keeps insisting that in the first place it separates its economy from its foreign policy as much as possible. And secondly, it does not restrict its entire foreign policy to the case of negotiations with the 4+1 group. The time is ripe for increasing the source of power, and this is the point in the course of the negotiations where both bilateral and multilateral diplomacy is active. Iranian missiles are tested, and Iran's oil revenues are approaching pre-JCPOA levels. Recently, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amin Abdullahian has once again reaffirmed that Tehran has no intention of wasting time or derailing the sanctions removal talks in the Austrian capital Vienna, criticizing the West, particularly the United States of America, for failing to present any innovative proposals of its own in the negotiations in Vienna. Amin Abdullahian made the remark in an interview with China Global Television Network, CGTN, before wrapping up his official visit to Beijing at the invitation of his Chinese counterpart, Foreign Minister Wang Yi. He said, "We assured Chinese officials that Iran is not playing with time or trying to derail the negotiations, and that we have made constructive, positive, and realistic proposals at the negotiating table in Vienna." Amin Abdullahian hailed China's constructive and rational role in the Vienna negotiations, saying, "Beijing is always opposed to the cruel unilateral sanctions imposed by the United States on countries including Iran and condemns the bullying practices of the United States." The Iranian foreign minister added that in talks with his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi, he appreciated Beijing's support for Tehran's stance during the Vienna talks and expressed hope that China would continue to support Iran's position. Amin Abdullahian emphasized that China and Russia support Iran's constructive initiatives, but Western countries, including the United States, have so far offered no innovative proposals of their own in the Vienna talks. Amin Abdullahian said, "If the parties can resume their commitments under the Iran nuclear deal, Iran will also return to commitments based on the agreement. If Iran can get the expected economic benefits from the agreement, so will all the parties to the agreement." Iran also argues that lack of initiative among the Western parties to the Vienna deal is the main factor slowing down the talks in Vienna. Addressing a regular press conference on Monday, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Zhao Lijian, voiced his country's strong opposition to illegal and unilateral sanctions against Iran and gross interference in the internal affairs of the Islamic Republic and other countries of the region.
Thank you.
have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM, 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hussain Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha, and thank you for joining us here today. Today, we're going to be looking at a beautiful tradition which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. In this beautiful tradition, the Prophet says, "The least comfortable of human beings is the miser." Let's take a moment to look at this beautiful tradition and analyze it. You know, one of the principles of our beautiful religion, the religion of Islam, is that we're of the opinion that Islam is a religion which is harmonious with reason and the intellect, and none of its laws are contrary to human reason. At the same time, we know that human reason is limited and can't understand everything and all of the secrets and intricacies of the universe. It's because of this that religion comes, and in those places where the human reason is unable to understand certain things, it religion comes and guides the mind. One of those places where reason a lot of times can't understand or comprehend the wisdom behind this phenomenon is like the certain rulings that we have in religion. One of those rulings is reflected and manifested in this tradition. In Islam, and we have lots of traditions which say that if you want your wealth to increase, you should give charity. If you want your wealth to increase and you want to be prosperous, you should give charity. This is like one of those things where, it kind of doesn't make sense to the mind, or at least the mind has a hard time understanding it. But nevertheless, it's been affirmed by religion and by God. Converse to this, is what has been mentioned in this religion. A person who is stingy and is miserly and tries to hoard his wealth and doesn't want to give it away, right? This trait or this habit leads to his poverty. It leads to his poverty, and it leads to a contrary result from what the person expected. And this is what happens for this person in this world. And if you think about it, it also leads to contrary result for the person after he dies. This person is saving his wealth for what? He's saving the wealth. He doesn't want to give it to people. But in reality, he's storing this wealth up for another person who's going to inherit it from him when he dies. That's why Imam Ali, in another tradition, has been related to have said, the miser stores wealth for his inheritor. He thinks he's storing it for himself. But in essence, and he doesn't want to give it to people, but in essence, he's saving wealth to give a bigger amount for people, for another person after he dies. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Afa for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. Oh Lord, here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
The spotlight.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of information.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Saudi Arabia has intensified its airstrikes on Yemen, killing dozens of civilians in its latest air attacks, that is, on two key cities. A frenzied bombing campaign comes amid the Yemeni army's successful retaliatory operations and major advances made against the Saudi and Emirati-backed militants. What are the consequences of the recent escalation for the region and beyond? And where is the deadly war heading for? These are some of the issues that we'll try to discuss in this edition of Spotlight.
There's no end in sight to the Saudi-led aggression against Yemen. Riyadh and its allies commit yet another inhumane crime amid the deafening silence of the United Nations and other international bodies and so-called advocates of human rights. Saudi warplanes bombarded the western city of